Annie must have been pleased that Edward had singled her out rather than Lillian Smith. She accepted, and beat the Duke. Her next royal encounter pleased Annie even more. Queen Victoria had been in mourning since the death of her beloved husband Albert in 1861. She appeared in public to unveil memorials to him. Otherwise, her people almost never saw her. So it astonished London when the Queen, like every other man, woman, and child in the city, decided that she had to see the Wild West show. On the day of the command performance, Victoria arrived promptly at 5. She took her seat in a box filled with flowers and draped with crimson velvet. Bill opened the show by saluting her from his prancing white Mustang. Then Indians, in full battle dress, and lariat-twirling cowboys rode past, whooping their greetings. The woman who had been wearing black for 17 years began to have a good time. She especially enjoyed Annie's performance, and called for her with a little nod and a wave of her hand. She asked Annie many questions about her life and career, and told her she was a very, very clever little girl. To be called clever by Queen Victoria meant the highest compliment, Annie wrote proudly. It was the high point of her visit. Annie became a star during her 6-month stay in London. People greeted her by name when she took her morning ride in Hyde Park. London society invited her to lunches, teas, and dinners. Bootblacks and newsboys called her the boss shooter. Though she made no secret of the fact that she was happily married, more than one count proposed marriage. She even inspired a novel called Rifle Queen Annie Oakley. It was 64 pages of whopping lies and wild stories, and the public loved it. Annie also established herself as a world-class markswoman in London. The Notting Hill Gun Club, a group of the best shots in England, presented her with a large gold medal, the only one it ever awarded. The London gunmaker Charles Lancaster admired Annie's shooting so much that he designed and made a group of lightweight guns just for her. By now, Annie far outshone Lillian Smith, though Lillian insisted on equal billing with Annie and got it. However, a newspaper story reported that Lillian was cheating in her act. It said that she was lying about both the speed and the accuracy of her shooting. Annie kept silent. She may have suspected all along that Lillian was dishonest, but she was above saying so. At the same time, Annie's relationship with Bill grew tense. Perhaps he resented her popularity, which now was greater than his. He certainly ignored the stories about Lillian Smith and treated her as Annie's equal. To Annie, this must have seemed very unfair. As ladylike as ever, Annie said nothing about her differences with Bill, but at the end of the London season, she and Frank left the show. Chapter 10. Europe. Annie and Frank worried over their decision, but it proved to be a good one. The public wanted to see Annie Oakley, whether she was with Buffalo Bill's show or not. She returned to America a star. For the next year and a half, she entered dozens of shooting matches. She won most of them, and a great deal of prize money, too. Then she took the lead in a play called Deadwood Dick, or The Sunbeam of the Sierras. As Sunbeam, she played a pioneer girl captured and raised by Indians. She ended the show by shooting a dozen glass balls before running off stage in a cloud of smoke. "I never understood why the press abstained from vegetable throwing," she wrote, "but they threw not one carrot." As usual, Annie was being modest. Reporters wouldn't dream of throwing anything at Annie. They loved her. Annie never spoke about her difficulties with Buffalo Bill. she kept silent when they were smoothed over in 1889. It was probably no coincidence that she agreed to come back to his show the year Lillian Smith left. Bill was taking everyone to Paris, and he wanted Annie to come along. He expected a successful run there, as good as the one in London. It was an appealing prospect for everybody, including Annie and Frank. But on opening night, 20,000 Parisians watched the ambush of the Deadwood stage and the burning of the settlers' cabins in chilly silence. These scenes, so popular in America and England, left them cold. Bill realized that the French knew very little about American history, or the English language, and might not understand or enjoy a great deal of the show. He was faced with the awful possibility that Paris would be a flop. Then Annie appeared in the arena. Her brilliant shooting needed no translation. It spoke for itself. And it dazzled the French, who soon were cheering wildly. By the next day, Annie was the talk of Paris. Thanks to her, the six-month French run was a success, and she herself was adored. When Bill decided to take the show on a three-year tour of Europe, Annie and Frank decided to go too. Annie was not a typical American tourist. In Munich, she saved a Bavarian prince's life by hauling him out of the path of a runaway horse. In Venice, she rode in a gondola full of American Indians. In Vienna, she met Franz Joseph I, the Emperor of Austria and Hungary. Seeing his lined, worried face, she wrote, "I decided that being plain little Annie Oakley with 10 minutes' work twice a day was good enough for me, for at least I had my freedom." Of course, she wasn't plain little Annie Oakley anymore. Annie was now a celebrity. News of her traveled fast and far, and when a French newspaper mistakenly reported that she was dead, the story spread quickly. Within days, it appeared in papers all over Europe and America. "Poor Anne Oakley dies in a foreign land. The greatest of female shots," read the headline in one.